I want to invite Sean and Helen to join me on the platform. Why don't we give them a round of applause as we welcome them up this evening?
Okay, let me introduce Helen to you. This is Helen Howells Cole. And Helen is a placements coordinator at Morelands College. Now, Morelands College isn't far from here. Many of us will know about it. It's in Sopley, isn't it? Which isn't far from Christchurch, in a beautiful setting. And you're a placements coordinator there. You also do some lecturing, and you're a tutor. So thanks very much for coming to join us tonight to share your story of hope. Now, you were born in the Midlands, in Tamworth,
yes.
Near Birmingham.
Yep.
So just tell us a little bit about childhood and your family.
Born around Tamworth, grew up in a Christian home, so church has always been part of my life from a very young age. My parents have always been actively involved in the church. I remember my dad was my youth leader, so I was one of the kids that didn't get free rein when tuck was served at the end of the night, but had a parent standing there going, "Oh, are you buying that for me?" and having to hand some of the sweets over. Myself and my brother were brought up in the church, holidays at Spring Harvest, Soul Survivor, a lot of the festivals, a big part of my life. And then as I was going through high school, I knew I wanted to do something working in missions. And it was actually a non-Christian friend of mine who spoke to me and who had heard about an organisation called Youth with a Mission, or YWAM, as it's often known. I didn't do my research properly. I didn't know at that time that YWAM was an international organisation, and I could have gone and done a gap year in Hawaii, and instead I went to Nuneaton.
Bit of a difference. Yes.
My parents were horrified when they found out they could have come visit me elsewhere in the world. I ended up spending 5 years with YWAM. Leading.
How old were you then?
18 at the time, so as soon as I finished school.
Yeah.
And then spent 5 years taking short-term missions teams around the world. So every year I would spend 3 months in a different country, seeing God work miracles, seeing provision for our team that should have been impossible, and many, many stories that aren't the time to tell tonight.
Yeah. But you came to Bournemouth in 2010, didn't you? Why was that?
Yeah, so I was starting to get a sense that I really wanted to go deeper into the Bible and understand more about who God is. Another friend who was at YWAM who had heard of Morelands and told me about Morelands. Morelands appealed to me mainly because of the placement aspect. As somebody that I say had been around the world, every year, I knew that sitting in a mainstream university behind a desk wasn't going to suit me. But having an opportunity to be involved in the local churches was what I wanted. And so came down to start my degree at Morelands.
And you got married, and to Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd been married for, I think it was 11 months and 3 weeks. You were beginning to talk about your future together and what you'd do. You were even talking about possibly starting a family. And then something happened quite suddenly that dramatically changed your life.
Yeah.
Tell us what that was.
Yeah, so I met Rick at Morelands. Just to give the context, we were good friends who never saw a relationship developing. We were adamant there was nothing there other than friendship for a while. But we fell in love. We got married in the February of 2014. Rick was, interestingly, he was the children, youth and family worker at Rosebery Park Baptist Church. He was looking ahead to Baptist accreditation and ministry. And towards the end of the January in 2015, he caught a virus, nothing serious. He had high temperature, swollen glands. That was it. We'd been out for my birthday to celebrate. It was a really special night, actually. He'd been to see the GP the next week, and the GP said, "Yep, there's nothing wrong. Go home." Saw the GP later in the week, who said, nope, still can't find anything wrong, but take some antibiotics in case it's bacterial. Come back on Monday for a blood test if your temperature still hasn't dropped. So the GPs were looking after him. As many of us know, antibiotics aren't always the most pleasant experience. So on the Friday night, he was feeling a bit ill in the night. I was up with him. But we noticed something wasn't right. I phoned the emergency services. They came out. They were very prompt. Paramedics were there with us in the house. And Rick went into cardiac arrest in the early hours of the Saturday morning. And there was nothing they could do. They managed to get him to the hospital. They continued to work on him. They continued to try and save him. But they were unable to. And what's been interesting, challenging in the whole thing is in the following post-mortem and the following kind of investigations, Rick's death has gone down as sudden adult death syndrome, which means there is absolutely no medical reason why he died that night. His family, his parents, his sister, extended family, have all been through subsequent medical testing. And again, there's been no genetic reason why he should have died. The virus that he had was nothing more than a virus. The doctors did nothing wrong.
Now, obviously, the shock of that must be so difficult to even put into words, even now, and to describe how you must have felt. But what were some of the emotions you experienced, and how did it really challenge your faith and trust in God? I mean, you were so young, weren't you, at that time?
Yeah, we were very young. Rick was 24 when he died. I was a couple of years older. It was a really, really difficult season and really challenging for my faith. It's really significant looking back that the paramedics were there, that Rick had seen the GP, everything like that. And what it meant for me is there was no human error. There was nowhere where I could direct any of any anger, any confusion, any pain other than towards God. I couldn't blame another person. In hindsight, I think that was God's protection over me and over my heart. But I had a lot of questions. It really damaged my trust in God. I remember talking to a friend about it, and who quoted Matthew 7 to me, the verse that talks about, you know, what father, if a son asks for a piece of bread, will give him a stone? And I remember turning around to this friend and said, you don't get it, it's raining stones on me right now. Mm-hmm. That's all I could feel, that's all I could see. I found it very difficult to praise. All of our church songs that talk about the faithfulness of God, the goodness of God, none of that would compute. I couldn't see any of that. But I never stopped believing. I'd seen too much of God. I've experienced too much of God in other areas to kind of think that God didn't exist. And so the discipline of lament became really significant for me, and kind of pushing back into God through lament and through being able to direct my prayers of confusion and my questions in that way.
And can you think of specific things at that time that brought you comfort? Mm-hmm. There was the anger, there was the pain, there was the confusion. But was there light sometimes in the darkness, and things there, people who were able to bring you comfort?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I never wanted to admit it at the time, but looking back, I can see where God was moving. So one example was we didn't go home straight away. I didn't feel able to go back to my house. The pastor of Rosebery Park offered up her home to us, to my parents, before we went to a B&B that was owned by a Christian for a few days. I had amazing friends and family. The staff at Moorlands and the students as well were all fantastic at supporting. And there were probably, I think, two defining moments over the next year that I think really showed where God was moving and working through my grief and working with me. And one was probably just about a year after Rick died, my aunt and uncle paid for me to go to the Word Alive conference in Prestatyn. I'd said I couldn't afford to go, and they said, we're going to pay for you to go. Nothing had been released about the conference, but I thought, this will be good. I want to try and reconnect with God. I need to find a way forward. Only after we paid did they then announce that the theme for the week was going to be the book of Job and how God connected with Job. And I sat there going, right, okay, we're doing this. I spent the first day of the conference, me being me, in the bookshop. I was starting my master's degree. My uncle had offered to support me with some books. So I spent the first day painstakingly going through the bookshop. And I promise you, I looked at every single book that was in that bookshop. Later in the week, there was a talk that particularly challenged me. I can't remember what it was now, but I remember it was a talk that I didn't want to hear, even though God was trying to talk to me. I wasn't ready for it. And I walked out and went into the bookshop. And there, in the middle of one of the bookstands, was an isolated copy of R.T. Kendall's book called Totally Forgiving God. And it was the only copy in the entire bookshop. You know, if that wasn't God speaking to me, I don't know what was. And that book helped me a lot. And then the other moment was, I remember praying and trying to ask God, why? Why has this happened? Lord, we know, why have you taken Rick? What? I couldn't see any good that was coming out of this. And I just felt God say to me, would any answer be enough? And that was such a powerful moment to sit there and say, actually, no answer would ever be enough. Actually, if Jesus was sat here today and was able to show me the master plan and able to say, this is why it happened, this is why Rick died, I'd still want to argue it and I'd still want to be saying, surely there was another way, surely there was another solution. And I think that just brought me a lot of peace, though, to know that actually I was never going to get an answer, but that was okay. And I could then work through that and begin to trust that God's ways are so much bigger than my plans, than any of our plans. And I just needed to try and trust and find a way forward.
And do you find that that's still an ongoing thing? Do you find that you've come to a closure, to a position of peace about it, or do the questions come back?
I think the questions still come back. There is a lot more peace, but I think there are still a lot of questions. There's things that happen in life, and it makes me kind of wonder, okay, where would things be if Rick was here now? Would he have done his, you know, Baptist accreditation, and looking at life that way? When I face other difficult times, it is easier now, though, to kind of actually go, no, okay, I've got to trust God is in control, and to see the bigger picture. But it isn't always easy.
Helen, you've been through this experience, so what would you say to someone tonight who struggles massively with the pain and suffering in our world, in our personal lives?
It's a really difficult question. And I was thinking about this and trying to think that I don't have a nice kind of clean answer to the question, because I think suffering is something that's so difficult to understand, and we don't get the answers. But I think my encouragement would be to include God in the conversation, that God is bigger than anything that we are facing, and he is also big enough to handle our emotions and our confusion and our questions. And we can't do things in our own strength. We can never understand things with our own reason and our own thoughts. But with God, we can find a way through it. And I was never a fan of the kind of cliche Bible verses in kind of the early days of my grief, and kind of the phrases of, you know, God being in control and everything. But having now come through the other side, I feel I can say that with more confidence and say, no, God is in control, and God is there to give comfort, to bring support, and to bring encouragement when people are struggling.
Mm-hmm. And I think what comes through in your story as well is that although there are no neat, tidy answers to some of these issues and the suffering that we can experience, we can be honest about that with God, can't we? Which obviously you have been over the months, over the years, and go to him as the only source of hope and comfort in our situation. And just to bring it up to date, we've got Dave here tonight. You remarried, and this is your husband. And you've actually kept Rick's name, and Dave, you've also taken that name on, so you're both Helen and Dave Howells Cole. Yeah. To keep that memory, which is lovely, of someone who was very special in your life.
Mm. It's been really important to us, and Rick's family are still very much a part of my life and my story, and Dave's story as well, which is brilliant.
Perhaps to finish, I can just ask you the question that we asked Nikki. We're coming up to Easter, and we had a very clear explanation there, didn't we, from John about the significance of Good Friday and the resurrection. What does Easter mean for you? I mean, the shops are full now, aren't they, of all sorts of chocolate Easter eggs, and it's very commercialised. But what, as a Christian, is the significance of Easter for you?
I think for me, the word that comes to mind is actually very nicely linked with the theme of tonight, and that is the word hope. Firstly, hope in the fact that what happened over the Easter weekend on the cross and the resurrection is for everybody, that nobody is beyond the reach of God's love. And also, for me, I think there's a lot in the hope in a season of waiting in the Easter story. I think often when we think of the Easter story, we think of everything that happened on Good Friday and everything that happened on the cross. And then we fast forward to the resurrection and celebrate the glory of Jesus rising again and the victory over death. But I also like to think of what happened in between and what that must have been like for the disciples in that period of waiting and wondering, confusion, and what was happening. And that recognition that actually in that time, the story wasn't over. Like, Jesus' death on the cross wasn't the end. That wasn't the end of the story. There was more to come. God had a plan, a bigger plan. And I think recognizing that has then makes the resurrection even more powerful for me. Mm. And that hope of a future, the victory, and seeing God bring that way forward.
Mm. Thank you, Helen, very much. Thank you also for just helping us all to see how God can be with us at times of great loss, and in our suffering, and can give us that sense of hope. We're very grateful for what you've shared, and lovely to have Dave with us as well. So let's show our appreciation.